I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to another Talking Simpsons interview. I'm one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, and who is here with me today, as always?
Ready to blast off, it's Henry Gilbert.
And this time we are talking to Bill Oakley once again for a very important reason. It's because Bill has an upcoming audio series via audible.com. It is called Space 1972, and it's coming out very soon, and we want to talk to Bill about that, his previous audio series, Space 1969, and of course we have some very obscure Simpsons questions to lob at him.
Yes, especially about the most recent seasons we've been covering of 5 and 6, where him and Josh Weinstein, in case you don't know, somehow you don't know, it's Bill and Josh wrote some of the best episodes of The Simpsons and show ran seasons 8 and 7, and we have several obscure questions in there. You will learn some Simpsons secrets in there as well. There's still things that Bill Oakley has not told us about his time on The Simpsons.
So I think that's all the context you need, and if you want links to Bill's audio series, check out the podcast description. But without further ado, here is our chat with Bill Oakley. And joining us on the line, we have Bill Oakley, who I think needs no introduction. We've been talking to Bill for the better part of 10 years. Welcome back to Talking Simpsons, Bill Oakley.
Hey, thank you. It is great to be back here and see you guys again.
Yeah, we were just talking that the Poochie episode, I think, was the last time we were all together in the same room back in October 2024.
That was a fun night. I really enjoyed that.
And this time around, we're here to talk about Bill's upcoming, I would not call it an audio drama. Bill, how would you define this? An audio comedy? An audio sci-fi comedy?
Yeah, audio comedy is pretty good. I mean, the thing is that this is like, it's weird to say, it's not a podcast. It's not really an audio book. In fact, when the first one came out, up till the day that they posted it, Audible was trying to figure out whether to call it an audio book or a podcast. And they finally settled on audio book, which also doesn't quite seem right to me. I call it like a radio show, radio play, but they specifically say don't call it a radio play. So I'm at a loss. Let's just call it an audio book, even though it's really more of a radio show.
All of us old timers can think of it as a radio play.
Thank you.
And you're here to talk about your upcoming audio sci-fi comedy, Space 1972, which is the sequel to Space 1969. And we're just curious, how long has this idea been gestating in the head of Bill Oakley? Was it always going to take the form of this audio production? Did you have other plans in mind, or did this just seem like the perfect format for this story?
These ended up being the perfect format. This is something that I wanted to do. Okay, so just a little setting the stage a little bit here. I have a project that is my main writing project and has been for the past 6 or 7 years called Space 1969. It's available on audible.com, and it stars Natasha Lyonne. The sequel to that is coming out, and it's called Space 1972. Now, to answer your questions, yes, this has been around for a long time in my head, and it's because it's been around for at least 15 years, and because I wanted to do it as a TV show, but it was too niche. This is a triple niche thing. It's a history, sci-fi, comedy. That's three niches, right? And so TV, everyone in TV was like, no, thank you. And to the point that I was like, you know what? Even in comic books, everyone was like, no, thank you. And that was a hard pill to swallow. But then Audible contacted me about, I guess it was about 6 years ago now, and said, do you have any projects you'd like to do that I prepared for Audible? And I was like, yeah, I have this project that has been my passion project for years, and I've never found the right format for it because it's honestly, it would be incredibly expensive to make. But as an audio project, it's actually not that expensive to make, and it actually is a very vivid universe. Audible has been able to create, they do an incredible job with the sound effects and the processing and so forth and the acting. So I sold this to them about 6 years ago, Space 1969. And it's an enormous project that has 10 episodes, which I wrote all by myself. And it was like a 600 page script approximately that I spent years writing. And then now I spent the last 3 years writing Space 1972, the even longer and even better and even funnier sequel, which is fine, and a year producing it as well, with all the same cast, actors, all your favorite characters are back, and the story is even more, I would say it's more entertaining than the first one, which was pretty my favorite thing I ever wrote.
And we should say, if you miss hearing the voices of Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein together, they are part of the cast of Space 1969. I assume you're both returning to Space 1972, Bill.
Yes, we are both returning, and almost all the same characters are back, plus a few new characters.
Following your career so closely for so long helped me a lot with this series because it plays around in so much of like the 60s, like trivia and iconography and space age stuff that is in so much of your work. Like references in this, like the first time I heard of, you know, Halderman was from watching Sideshow Bob Roberts. And then now you're playing him in this. Like, yes.
It is a boatload of that stuff. In fact, I would also say the reason I wanted to tell you guys about it and your listeners is because it's very much the sense of humor that I had on The Simpsons. You know, this is the kind of sense of humor that I wrote the script in Simpsons script format. And I know how, because I know how the rhythms of the show grow and how many jokes you need to have per page and all that stuff. And like how long a dialogue piece seems on the page and so forth. So the script, I feel this has a very much Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, even though Josh didn't write it, sense of humor involved. And it's also been compared by other people to Futurama, except it's in the past, which we also worked on. And so I think people who like Simpsons, especially your listeners, would really enjoy this. And if you know, you can't watch Simpsons while you're driving, but you could listen to this, especially if you're on a summer road trip or whatever. I think it moves along at a great clip. There's a lot of humorous stuff. I find the story to be very engaging. I actually listened to Space 1972 now several times all the way through just for fun.
Yeah, just within a few minutes, I thought they turned the Oakley knob up to 11. If you enjoy your episodes in seasons 5 and 6 and how you ran the show in season 7 and 8, this is all of the best Oakley content. And I found there was some deep Bill Oakley lore. If I may ask you a Wizard's Key question, Bill, I know that in the past, you and Josh wrote a spec script for Seinfeld about, I think, George swallowing a piece of glass. And I think that idea did make it into Space 1969 in the earlier episodes.
Did it?
Oh, with Ian.
It's
Ian
definitely
Rasmus.
Space 1972.
Yeah. I was wondering if you were referencing an idea you could never put on TV or just an idea that's been floating around your head, the idea of swallowing a piece of... It's one of the patients that the nurse character, Natasha Lyonne's character, has to treat and sit with him for a very long time when he thinks he swallows a piece of glass.
It's how Nancy meets Ian Rasmussen, how he...
There you go.
Oh my God. See, I haven't listened to that one in like 2 years now. So yes, that's exactly what it was. And that also appears similarly in Space 1972 now. I've realized for now for the first time. But yes, that's exactly what that happened to me in college. But just explaining to people, 30 years ago, Snapple used to come in those glass bottles that had the foam that wrapper around them, right? So one time I drank bottle Snapple, discovered that the bottom was cracked and that there potentially had been little pieces of glass floating around in it that I drank. So I was too afraid to even call the emergency room. My girlfriend called the emergency room by half and said, what would happen if you swallow pieces of broken glass? And they said, well, there's no way to know until your next bowel movement, in which case it would be black because there'd be so much blood in it. And I was like, oh my God. So there you get sometimes as long as 24 hours where everybody's extremely concerned about your next bowel movement. So that was the entire premise of the Seinfeld script that we wrote, Josh and I wrote, that got us a job on The Simpsons and a job offer at Seinfeld. And so, yes, I've reused that multiple times over my life.
Bob, I had forgotten that it was their
spec
script.
Thank you, Bob.
Man, that's great. Yeah.
Yes, it's our job to surprise you with facts about yourself, Bill.
well done.
I also noticed, too, like something that was so key in the years on The Simpsons was like a major plot point just in the first episode hinges on like the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis reunion, this time in space and this. Like that was like as big as the moon landing to your generation, right?
Absolutely. And there wasn't, by the way, it wasn't really to my generation. The funny thing about this is people think that it's a stroll down the memory lane for me, but I was only 3 years old when all this stuff happened. I don't remember that none of this stuff happened when I was a kid. Like, I was too young to even appreciate any of this stuff, but I learned about it and loved it growing up, watching syndicated TV reruns, reading old issues of Mad Magazine and stuff like that. So as much as there is of that stuff in 1969, there's just as much in Space 1972, but it's a whole new world. It's 3 years later, and as much as the culture in our real world changed in those 3 years, it has changed as well in the Kennedy administration between 1969 and 1972, which is an election year. I'm happy to give some spoilers, and let me just say, in case you've listened this long and you don't know what I'm talking about, Space 1969 takes place in a universe where John F. Kennedy was shot, as really happened, but he didn't die. He was in a coma briefly, and then when he woke up, he had this epiphany that we were wasting our time fighting a war in Vietnam, that we should be spending all that money and energy colonizing space. So in Space 1969, John F. Kennedy has now been elected for a third term in 1969, and America has a space station that orbits the Earth and is building a moon colony. And Natasha Lyonne is our star, who is a nurse on this space station that is drawn into this massive conspiracy. Now, the whole thing takes place in a universe that is loaded with you know, pop culture things such as the Beverly Hillbillies and music and magazines and things from that as well, all drawn from reality, except the only difference is we're slightly more advanced in space. And it was, a lot of it was inspired by 2001, you know, that kind of stuff, that the Pan Am thing in 2001 yeah. and the Hilton Hotel, those things are all in there, but loaded with realistic things from 1969, as well as the fact that Kennedy is kind of a tyrant. And in 1972, those things have, let's just say it's been 3 more years of that, and people aren't quite as happy about it as they were. Furthermore, I would say, I didn't intend this, but there are a lot, there's some parallels to what we're living through today with a tyrant who is to some degree irrational and won't leave office. And so let's just say that that's, it plays an undertone. There's undercurrent of that in this new one as well.
And we're also curious, Bill, about how this process is different than the television writing process. It's a much larger project. It's obviously show, don't tell. So how does this work on your end? How much control do you have over things like casting? I see, at least according to some credits, you were a voice director on the series, and you did that on The Simpsons as well. Can you just explain the process to us?
Yes, God bless them at Audible. Basically, they let me do this just the way I wanted. So like on both of these series, I have been pretty free to do whatever I want. I received some light notes from the people at Audible, like, could you make this clearer? Could you change this name? Because we're going to get sued. Could you not use this piece of expensive music? That type of thing. Or like, and in some cases, their notes have always been very helpful too. We want a slightly better ending on this episode. Very helpful, very easy notes. And so it's really just me sitting and writing for several years on my own and living in this universe right now. Then what happens is the casting, yes, there's a guy named Thomas Mann who's been the producer on both of these things, and he handles all the day-to-day stuff, and he does the casting, although I choose the thing. He sends me, here's 7 different people to play Nixon, whatever, right? And then we choose them, we have auditions. It's just like a regular TV show or anything like that, and then we record them, but we don't have to go anywhere because we can do it online. And in fact, the first one, based on 1990, was done entirely during the pandemic, when everyone was shifting from, previously they had done it, they made people go to recording studios, but every single thing in Space Fantasy Center is recorded at home, and they shipped people, including me, these enormous suitcases with a whole like computer and audio setup, and you had to build like a little tent in your room with like mattresses and stuff to make it soundproof, and that was all recorded like this. Now, Space 1972, people are more used to working at home, so some people recorded at home, some people went to recording studios, you know, the old-fashioned way. And then we have an absolutely brilliant editor who worked on both of them and pieced them all together and, you know, created the world of the sound effects and things like that. And then I'd say it's fairly simple because it's not like TV. There aren't as many moving parts as there would be in a TV show. There's really only like probably about a total of 6 people who work on this, and they mostly let me do whatever I want. And I do direct the audio, although Thomas fills in sometimes when it's not something I can be there for. But also, almost all the actors already did Space 1969, so they didn't need a lot of direction. They know what the character sounds like. They know how to perform the lines. Especially, I should say, Jim Meskimen. I want to say, without going into great detail about Jim Meskimen, he plays Richard Nixon, who plays a huge role in both of these things. He's the most talented impressionist I've ever seen in my life. Like, you know, people talk about Rich Little, right? And I've seen Rich Little, and Rich Little is good. But Jim Meskimen is 1,000 times better. And Jim Meskimen can do any voice. If you follow him on Instagram, you know, or TikTok, he puts out things every day where he's doing impressions of actors or whatever, just for fun, for 30 seconds. It's Christopher Walken, it's Patrick Stewart, it's Jack Nicholson or whatever. His impressions are amazing. And you can also just ask him to do obscure ones too. He can do anything like, yeah, let's just say he does Gerald Ford, amazing Gerald Ford in this. But like, he's the most talented impressionist I've ever worked with. And if I were doing an animated TV show, he would be the first person I would go to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's an incredible Nixon. It's not over the top. It brings the character a lot of humanity just because he's so miserable.
Yes, and his emotion. He never got the brass ring to that character,
yeah,
which I've never seen before. And that's part of, I think, why this show was successful. By the way, that's what I should say. The reason there is a sequel is because the first one became a bestseller. And this, like, much to my surprise, and to Audible's surprise, because they didn't promote it at all, that it became a bestseller just through word of mouth. And also because Natasha and I were tweeting about it relentlessly and so forth. But it got thousands of reviews and likes and has a 5-star rating on Audible. And it became a bestseller purely by word of mouth. So I think they're hoping for that again, and which is why I'm promoting it myself again, Well, there's no billboards in Times Square this time. You guys just have to buy it.
The Nixon as first the narrator and then active participant in it. Yes, I mean, you and Josh wrote some of the funniest Nixon stuff in your time on Simpsons. And like you said, you worked on Futurama where Nixon's a major character there. And like, but here, yes, it is. Nixon is so like lowered in it. I mean, every joke about no one recognizing the man who almost was president in that universe and how he's only been brought lower since losing the California governor race. Like, it's just so funny.
Let me just say, you ain't seen nothing yet. That Nixon, you're going to get some fantastic Nixon material and an ending that you will never see coming, but will seem incredibly perfect, I think, that involves Richard Nixon as well. In Space 1972.
And Bill, what can you tease about the next series, Space 1972, in terms of, you know, is it the same length, the similar tone, any key plot elements you want to dish out before it goes live?
Yes, it's an identical tone, many of the same characters. And as I said, it is now in a universe where Kennedy has running for a fourth term. It's an election year. And people aren't quite as thrilled with the whole Kennedy thing as they were in 1969. Also, the Soviets and Chinese have a space station now, too. And so there's an increased pressure of like a cold war in space. And also, as I say, the culture has moved on from, like, to say the Beverly Hillbillies was the prime example of culture in Space 1969. Now it's All in the Family and the Brady Bunch. So there's a different, like, there's a different universe. Also, the music is not like the kind of Jan and Dean music of the other one. The music is kind of like the funky blaxploitation, Isaac Hayes type music. That, and it's that the culture has, in general, moved to be grittier, nastier America has happened in the early 70s. And it's, you know, so the circumstances are different. And I just say there's as much if or more pop culture stuff.
I did really love two more things I loved in it was that, like, one, in The Simpsons, in the Springfield episode you did, Burns kind of becomes a Howard Hughes figure. In 1969, Howard Hughes is more of a Burns figure. Like, him trying to map Hooterville was so funny. Every time it came up, I was laughing at that. That was so good.
That guy is amazing, too. Hughes is back, and it's to say this is more of the Las Vegas. There's a lot of the show takes place in Las Vegas in 1972 in the Howard Hughes universe. I'm not going to give you any further spoilers, but he is back and he does a great job too.
And also Natasha Lyonne as the lead as Nancy is so great. Also, I was thinking because she has a wonderful voice, the type of voice you don't hear so much anymore. And in your time on The Simpsons, like, you loved casting people who had a kind of, you know, a smoker's voice like that a lot of people don't have.
I was going to say, Bill, this is the perfect actress for you to cast because you and Josh, famous for casting a cranky old man, and Natasha Lyonne has the spirit of a cranky old man and kind of the voice of a cranky old man as well.
That's exactly right. In fact, there's several jokes about that in Space 1972, but the character and her voice do line up with the kind of stuff that we like to write, in which I could never have imagined anyone but her playing this role, and it took a long time. Like, we circled around other people, like, you know, what's her face? Melissa McCarthy. They were trying to get me to do Awkwafina for a while. And I was like, there's nobody on earth but Natasha Lyonne who can play this character the way I've written it. And magically she did. Like, she's absolutely perfect for this character. And I wrote it for her voice. And that's why it sounds so natural.
It's also funny. I thought too, like, last year she was in the Fantastic Four movie, which is also like an alternate history, space age 60s thing.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just funny. Mm-hmm. Like, she ends up in these type of things.
She had a huge year last year, man. She was in all sorts of things. Plus, she's got Russian Doll and Poker Face and all this stuff. She's doing amazing. And she's she's 10 times more famous now than she was when we put out Space 1969.
And I guess, Bill, before we transition to the next part of our interview, can you remind everyone out there about Space 1972, where it's available, when it's available, and just how to find it, how to listen to it?
It is available on audible.com. People know what Audible is. Audible is normally where you go to get audiobooks, right? And you want to hear Harry Potter when you're driving. You want to hear David McCullough's biography of whatever, Thomas Jefferson, when you're driving around. But they also do original projects. So like 99% of their library is books being read by somebody. But they also do original projects like this, like that are called audiobooks or Audible Originals. Just go to audible.com, search for Bill Oakley, or Space 1979. Sorry, Space. I'm spoiling the sequel now. Space 1979 hasn't been ordered yet, but that may be the next one. Space 1969 or Space 1972. You will find it. The pre-order page is already up, I believe, but it's not finished because the final graphics are not finished. So you could probably order it today, but it comes out officially June 11th.
Awesome. Awesome. I have pre-ordered it now. I always have Audible credits I'm forgetting about that that pre-ordered it now. Or
and again, we can confirm if you love Bill Oakley's work, and if you're listening to this, we know you do, you will love this. Again, the Oakley knob, they turn it up. It snaps off the machine.
It's very true. It is very true. And thank you guys for saying that. It's a thrill to have this project out there, and I can't wait for everybody to enjoy it. I would also say, if you've listened to, you don't have to have heard Space 1969 to appreciate this new one, but you will appreciate it a lot more if you've heard the other one, and actually pretty recently.
Well, and so we did want to, you know, since we have you here, we also did want to have super esoteric questions for you. We've interviewed you so many times, I was like, but we've asked, even though we're covering season six right now, and you and Josh did amazing work on season six and five, we've asked like some of the obvious ones, but there's still some deeper stuff we haven't dug into, especially from some original drafts of your scripts that are out there on Internet
Archive. I can't wait to hear these questions.
Feel free to respond, what the hell are you talking about? Because I've thrown this term out before. These are Wizard's Key questions. Yes.
I love it. I love it. I may not remember what you're talking about, but I look forward to have my memory refreshed.
Well, okay, so my first one that I have is, so Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy. There's an original script there, and there's a table draft. And I noticed this in one other season six table draft that you guys didn't write. But there were multiple jokes about Jerry Seinfeld's book Sign Language that season. But then they ended up getting cut. Do you recall that you wrote a scene where Krusty is doing a book signing of a similar book called like Krustologisms? And was there like a thing against, was it annoying everybody in the season six writer's room at that time, the sign language book for some reason?
I don't remember that at all. Like, it must have annoyed somebody. I'm fairly sure Josh and I would never have written that. Because I don't recall even hearing about that book. Was this in the, when they went to the bookstore?
Yes.
There was a lot of bookstore content that was cut in the original draft we saw.
Yeah. Also, there was a great...
What was the Krustologism's joke?
Yes. Well, provide context. Sign language was a Seinfeld book, but it was essentially just some transcriptions of his jokes.
Yeah.
We assume that the hostility is, this is very easy to do. And it's kind of shameful that he just published his stand-up as a book. And that's what the joke is about in both cases.
Did Krusty say anything?
He's offering to sign the book and nobody is taking it. And Just Stamp the Ticket Man is trying his best to avoid him. And he even says a name, like he gives a name in it, which would have, I did not write that down, but it doesn't count as canon anyway because it wasn't in the show. But
it doesn't sound like something that we would have written. It's quite possible that it was pitched in the room and we put it in. For the bookstore, kind of thing like that, what would have happened is, say, when you do the pitch out of the story, you just say, okay, everybody give us some Springfield bookstore jokes. And you'd write them all down, and you put as many of them in the first draft as you could, and then it would get cut for time.
We were very sad the episode lost a scene in which we find out Burns is a reader of Kathy, the comic strip Kathy.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That didn't make it in?
No, it did not. And it's delightful. I can hear Harry Shearer's voice. Yeah.
I guess I didn't even watch that episode when it aired, so I probably don't. I don't remember. That's weird. I could have sworn that made it in. But yeah, that episode was a weird episode too, because we had the thing, like, it's not my favorite thing that we wrote. I think there's a lot of funny jokes in there. Entertainment value dwindles like 2/3 of the way through, because I remember like the whole, we wanted to do all the medicine show stuff. And then everything after that was more like, we got to end this episode somehow. I think that's why you probably notice it's not anyone on anyone's top 10 list.
One other thing I pulled together that I did not intend was, two of my questions are cut things that actually do plug back into Space 1969 and 72.
Oh, my God.
One is a JFK reference that, so in Springfield, the gambling one, that's where Rich Texan debuts, and you and Josh created him in the script. And so in this early draft of Sideshow Bob Roberts, the trial scene is extended. Like, more people are called for questioning than just Bob, including Texan. And it's given away, they name him as Orvis P. Tex Heidel.
I remember that very clearly. I remember that very clearly. And I remember when we spent a long time coming up with that name. Yeah, that's his name. That should have been his name.
Yeah, I guess that was the Harvey Oswald reference.
Was it?
It was one of his aliases he used during his escape.
Okay. Okay, so, well, you got me, but I definitely remember that name for sure.
I guess in general, we're just curious as to how much JFK content was cut from that episode, because you guys have admitted your early scripts were very, very stuffed. Over-delivered.
I mean, that was all Watergate stuff. There might have been more Watergate stuff. I don't think there was that much JFK stuff, unless it was JFK assassination stuff, which I feel like the Texan was somehow involved in the JFK assassination. Wasn't that the joke?
His first joke, yes, when he gives Homer his cowboy hat. He's like, I was wearing this the day Kennedy got shot, and it's always brought me luck.
Yes, he's a Texan who hates Kennedy. One of those guys who was, you know, a Johnson follower, probably. So, wait, did that line make it in?
That one did, yes, for in the gambling episode.
It always brings me good luck. Okay, good, yeah. Good.
And you guys have been writing jokes about Nixon for a very long time, over 30 years now. And we saw that in the table draft of Sideshow Bob Roberts. There is an appearance by Nixon in the script. He is called to the stand as well. But 22 days after that table read, Nixon passes away. Do you recall the discussion of the Nixon jokes being cut? Because there are some, like, up to the line Nixon jokes, like him appearing in, I believe, Treehouse of Horror 4, where he is not dead yet. He wrote an yes. article for Red Book, is his line. Yes.
What I remember more specifically was Nixon was supposed to be Ford in that episode with George Bush, right? Mm. That was going to be the original draft of that, or at least the outline or the pitch out. I mean, Ford makes much more sense ultimately because Ford looks like Homer. But Nixon was supposed to be there. We wanted to get him. We wanted to get him to do his own voice. That was the thing that I distinctly remember being cut when Nixon died. The other thing I don't remember.
It was just such eerie timing. The table draft was dated like literally 3 weeks before Nixon passed away. So I was like, oh man, that had to suck to cut from it then. Like, or who knows if it was even animated.
Maybe. We had our fun with Nixon.
But now you can joke about all the celebrities in your audio series because they're all dead.
Yes, yes. And also people
no one's on the brink.
People don't really remember them. But hopefully people will once they listen to this and become all familiar with it, just the same way I did reading Mad Magazine in 1974.
Yes.
If you're a fan of Jerry Lewis, you'll be shocked.
And Dean Martin, yes, that Dean Martin, obviously Dean Martin has a major role in 1972.
I think too in the Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song, I think there was also like a Nixon scene. By the time the episode aired, he had died, so I wondered if he had like that even got animated and cut. At least in the script, he's like looking at the school when Skinner is looking at the school all sad. I believe it then cuts to like Nixon looking at the White House all sad.
Yes, I remember that.
Back. Yes, yeah.
There was so much in that episode of The Cut because it was way too long, and the whole third act is entirely different. I know you guys have probably seen this because I posted it online at some point, the whole outline, which had an entirely different second half, but it was way too long, where Homer became the sergeant at arms and all this other crazy shit. And then my favorite part is when Hank Williams Jr. came and beat up Ned Flanders. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, man. I have vague memories of this. I know there's an animatic on the DVD that shows a different ending, more Homer focused than the touching ending the episode eventually leads to in the final version.
Yeah. I mean, we had to cut like 15 pages out of that. So it had to be massively changed.
The Bill and Josh problem, too much good stuff. For 22 minutes.
God, we spent so much fucking time writing those things. That's like, I'd say seasons 5 and 6, you guys loved it. But all I remember is that every single time we turned in a script, we'd immediately be sent back to our office to write another one. And we'd be sitting there, you know, whatever, 51 weeks a year in that stupid office till 10 o'clock at night, cranking these things out and sitting out there wishing that we could do anything else that involved leaving that room. Yes. So anyway, but thank you for enjoying. I'm glad that I'm glad they're still popular all these years.
Your sacrifice was worth it, Bill.
Thank you.
In the end.
Bob, we talked about this before, but it seemed like, especially in 5, but also in 6, there's a lot of different credited writers, but there's a block of Bill and Josh and a block of Swartzwelder that it seems like you guys were like, kind of like, not partitioned off, but in your own like island of writing around the writer's room.
Yeah, very true.
Also in the Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song, that's when the Ned's Beatnik parents came up. Like when you first put them in there, were you thinking of something that could happen like Hurricane Nettie later, or was it just a funny moment to reveal?
Yeah, it was just
Ned's
a funny
backstory.
Moment. I completely forget, because also like they only appear twice, right? And they appear once in that episode and that flashback, and then they appear in the Hurricane Nettie, right?
I believe there are no appearances between those two episodes.
Yeah, it was just there for a quick joke, but it was so funny. And also that hilarious impression of, I think it's that guy, Dick Shawn is the guy's name, that Dan Castellan that I did, that makes me laugh and laugh and laugh to this day. And I still walk around saying it in my house, like, oh man, he's a cute, that kind of thing. Which is really also, you can see that guy in The Producers as well, doing that role, playing Hitler in The Producers.
Oh, right, yeah.
He is so funny.
We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas has become a motto in this current age.
I've seen that a lot online for sure. Yes.
So I guess we should wrap up soon. We wanted to discuss a controversial episode with you, Bill, and that is The Principal and the Pauper. And it seems that this episode has gained a new reputation. It might have lost its bad reputation because the YouTuber The Real Jims, who does some great Simpsons content, he put together a video on this episode. He did a poll with over 15,000 votes. 18% still dislike it. 26% have always liked it. 5% used to dislike it and now don't. And 51% are indifferent. And... It seems that people have really come to terms with this episode. Of course, you know that we have always been fans of this, and you put together a nice video for us when we presented it as a live show about the reputation of the episode and the intent of the episode. Have you noticed people warming up to it since its debut almost 30 years ago?
A little bit. 5%, I think. But did you say 5% of people have come around? That's about...
Yes, used to.
I think also now that we have so many more years of Simpsons material, it's like, it's honestly, I think people are too young to remember even what the context of it was now, right? Like, you'd have to be 40 years old to remember even the context of that. And people's like, in season 9, and people don't know what order the episodes aired in and all that stuff. So I think that part of it is the fact that the fan base now has so many people who didn't grow up with it during its first broadcast, didn't see it in the proper order, and didn't see it as some sort of strange moment where everything changed and the show fell apart. You know, but yes, I have a lot of opinions about that show. And I do have my own opinion is that, you know what it is, because we've discussed it a million times.
Oh, yeah.
It's that the people just couldn't swallow the fact that we were retconning this character, but yet they did it. And that was the whole point of Mad Men. Was it Dick Whitman? Was it really Don Draper? And people love that. And they loved it for hundreds of years in the story of Martin Guerre. But I understand. And I can understand that if there's something that sticks in your head, like, this character, they've screwed up the character now, and I can never enjoy it properly. And if I had to do that episode all over again, what I would do would be have Marge, just like in those early Halloween episodes, Marge would come out and say, this is an episode of Simpsons Fantasy Theater. This didn't really happen, so don't worry about it. And that would solve everyone's problem, or maybe most of their problems.
I think you're right about the Mad Men thing, Bill, because after that happened in this very highly praised prestige TV show, maybe people thought, oh, you know what? This is a good idea, and we were wrong to dislike it.
I mean, it does mess up his background. It also, like, I would say, you know, to be honest, I think having Ned's family parents be beatniks also messes up his background. I think if you were trying to think about it in the most realistic, logical way possible, that would not have been the way that Ned Flanders grew up. But it's funny. And it's much funnier than having a realistic, he had a, kind of a strict Christian father or whatever. It's funny that he had a beatnik father that's played by Dick Shawn.
To see Jim's, one of his things he said was, like, the majority of comments echo the indifference poll to the video he did, that, like, lots of folks say they never hated it or don't get what the big deal was. And yeah, I think it could be time has lightened it up for the over 40 crowd, or two, that if you didn't see it when it was live and it's just an old Simpsons episode to you as a viewer of The Simpsons who just is taking it in on Disney Plus, then you just watch the next episode. And
yeah,
it's not a thing you argue about online for weeks afterwards, or then, you know, it gets under your skin like a tick for some fans.
Yeah. I'm sure that in the context of watching all 850 episodes, there are probably other things that might stick in your head more than that at this late date.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot has happened. Many polarizing things have happened on the show. And like, you're right, Bill, that if you don't like what happened on that episode, there are 799 other episodes on Disney Plus. You could just go to one of those. Maybe you'll like it more. It's not like, well, we only have 8 seasons of this. It's rocking the boat too much.
Right.
On Talking Simpsons, we've tried to do our part in shifting the narrative too, because we do love that episode. And it's just, to me, what still makes me sad about it is that some people view it as like an affront to the character of Seymour Skinner, when, like, the reason most people give a shit about Seymour Skinner is your episodes of the show about Skinner before it. Like, you love him.
Well, I know Harry hates it too, and I think, or he hated it at the time. And I think I can understand. I suspect if I had been a viewer at the time, I would be one of those people who was like, they've lost. I would have been exactly the kind of person who got all outraged and complained. So I can understand that. But knowing why the episode came to be, I have a more sympathetic opinion of it.
Sure. Well, hey, I think those numbers are only going to go down. That 18% of still dislike it is only going to get smaller over time.
Okay, good.
Well, thanks again for talking to us, Bill. As a reminder, the audio series is Space 1972, and it is out on Audible. What is the date, Bill?
June 11th.
Awesome. Yes, everyone, please listen to it. The first series is amazing, and I expect this one to be as amazing or even better.
It is. It's better, longer, funnier, even more of a masterpiece, I dare say.
Better than 10 Super Bowls?
Better than 14 Super Bowls, this one.
Okay, we're good.
I can't wait. Thank you, Bill.
So So thank you again to our old friend, Bill Oakley. Again, please, we are imploring you, pick up Space 1972. And hey, if you haven't listened to it, pick up Space 1969. It's an amazing audio series. And again, it is the Oakley knob has broken off the machine. It's spinning wildly out of control and jokes are flying. They're hitting you in the ears.
It is pure Bill Oakley all over the place. Like in Space 1969, there is a list of old sodas that are out of date. Just like similar to, if you like the listing of detergents, it's a similar style of joke. Like, it's all there. I love a war between Beverly Hillbillies versus Green Acres is alluded to. There's so many great things.
Yes, and our podcasts are very long, often 3 hours long. We know you have time to fit this into your life. It's Bill Oakley, for Christ's sake.
So please check it out. June 11th is when it comes out, and 1969, currently available if you haven't heard that before either on Audible.
So we have nothing to promote, so thanks for listening, everybody, and please check out our other interviews in our archive.